I'm talking to Deborah Counts. Deborah, where are you calling from?
Weaverville, California.
Yeah, and Deborah, you're the mother of three children, right?
Yes.
Yeah, and you just got custody of your baby back.
Mm-hmm.
And you're currently fighting for custody for the other two children.
Yes.
Could you tell our free radio listeners, you know, what is the situation with your two older children?
The two older children on July, I had sole physical and sole legal custody of. And then July 15th of last year, I had my seizure medication for my epilepsy changed. And I went into a depression, cut my wrist once, and they removed the children from me. And they were thus given to the father, who lost them to Child Protective Services, and then they were given to the great-grandmother. And I haven't seen them since.
And your situation has improved, is that correct?
Yeah, the doctor changed my medication to another medication, and I've done fine ever since.
Mm-hmm. So this was actually kind of a predictable result, given that you were on the wrong kind of medication?
Yeah, the doctor even said that it was just a side effect of the medication I was on.
And you can document that?
Yes, I have proof of it.
Mm-hmm. Have you gone to Child Protective Services with this documentation from your doctor?
I did, but Child Protective Services said that they had closed the case and that they were no longer involved.
They've closed the case?
Mm-hmm.
So now the great-grandmother has custody of your children?
She filed legal guardianship in Santa Cruz on them.
Uh-huh. And the children do reside here in Santa Cruz?
They do now.
They do now. With the great-grandmother. And how old is the great-grandmother?
78.
I understand you have another concern. It's not just about them being with the great-grandmother instead of with their mother.
No, the great-grandmother lives there, and the mother, the grandmother, which is the great-grandmother's daughter.
Uh-huh.
The grandmother is a methamphetamine user. And then her son, who is the father of the children, is also a methamphetamine user as well as a convicted child molester.
And that's your greatest concern right
yeah.
now, is the father?
The father has them. He has brought them once to see me in Reading, so I know he has them a lot. He has them up in Reading a lot.
And you believe that the children belong with you?
Yes, they do belong with me.
And that that's the best situation, and they're...
Yeah, they were happy when they were with me.
Mm-hmm. So there were no allegations of abuse. It was just that you were going through a personal trauma.
Yeah, in fact, the CPS report, when they did take the children, said that there were no signs of abuse or neglect on my children.
Well, this is unbelievable. So now, which CPS did you deal with? The one up there in Weaverville or down here in Santa Cruz County?
Weaverville's about a half hour away from Reading. At first, I dealt with Shasta County CPS.
Mm-hmm.
The CPS worker went into court. He had planned to give me the children back. He begged the judge not to give them to the father, and the judge did. Approximately a month later, my ex-husband was picked up for drugs as well as having a loaded firearm in the presence of the children, and the children were taken from him by Tehama County Child Protective Services and turned over to the great-grandmother.
Mm-hmm.
I was never contacted. So I didn't know about it until she was already back in Santa Cruz with the kids.
Now, what is the legal status with you and the older children?
There's no status at all. The great-grandmother has legal guardianship, and I was told by...
So your parental rights were terminated?
No, they were not. My rights have never been terminated. I was supposed to be at a court hearing last month. I went to that court hearing, and I had to hitchhike from Reading to Santa Cruz. I showed up 5 minutes late, and they said the hearing was already over.
Oh, my God.
And told me that the only thing I could do was try to terminate the legal guardianship, which I don't have the money to fight it.
Mm-hmm.
That's been my whole problem the whole time, is I don't have the money for an attorney.
Yeah, it's a system that you're at a distinct disadvantage if you don't have an attorney. Although it could be argued also that even if you have an attorney, there's all hope is lost as well. This is your case is part of a phenomenon of cases of children where the government has sort of stepped in and taken over for some reason or another, and once they get involved in a family, it is so rare for them to come back and announce that that family is now healthy and that they...
The other part was July 12th last year, 3 days before my children were taken.
Mm-hmm.
We had a court hearing coming up in Reading for the final custody, where I had full physical and legal custody of the kids. And the mediator had reports sent over by Child Protective Services on me. And
yes.
According to those reports, they gave me glowing reports saying that I was very protective of my children, that I was a good mother, that they felt that the children were best off in my care. And 3 days later, my kids were taken. And these were CPS reports. I had glowing reports from them as well as many other agencies.
So who took your children?
Child Protective Services. They wrote these reports, and 3 days later, they took my kids.
And that was Child Protective Services here in Santa Cruz County?
That was Reading.
Oh, that was in Reading.
Santa Cruz CPS has never been involved.
Oh, I see.
This is going through probate court in your county.
Mm.
It's not even going through family law down there or CPS or juvenile court.
Well, I don't even understand that at all.
Neither do I. It's going through probate
court.
So I don't understand this.
So are you having a hearing down here in Santa Cruz in the near future?
No, they set it for a year away.
A year away?
Mm-hmm.
And you have no contact with your children whatsoever?
No.
Not even visitation? And yet your parental rights were never terminated. I don't understand that.
I've never even been proved unfit. My son is 7 years old. Up until last year, he had never been away from me overnight.
This must be incredibly stressful for you.
It is, and then to have the baby home and not the other two.
So you were reunited with your baby.
Yes, I am.
And
I have full physical and legal custody of the baby.
And so the courts and Child Protective Services have deemed that you're a perfectly fit mother for the baby.
Yes.
And yet for some reason you can't get these children back from the 78-year-old great-grandmother.
Yeah, which I also have concerns because of her age. My son has been diagnosed as attention deficit disorder and hyperactive, and yet the 78-year-old woman is taking care of him.
And you're not even informed on a regular basis about the children's progress in school or their medical records.
No. She told me point-blank that it was none of my business.
So you don't have a good relationship with this great-grandmother either, right?
No.
Is that correct?
No, because she says her grandson was innocent of the charges, which the charges were not on our kids. They were on another child.
Uh-huh.
That had nothing, that he didn't even know.
I see.
Apparently he just picked her up out of the blue. And on his probation report, it stated he was not even to be in the presence of children.
Mm.
As part of his probation.
Well, I'm at a loss as to advise you on what I would do next, but perhaps some of our listeners at Free Radio would have some sort of idea on how you should proceed next. So if they want to comment about Deborah Count's case, please call 423-HUFF, the Huff line, and leave a message there, and we'll... make sure that that you, Deborah, get the message.
Okay.
Deborah, could you also? I know that you were outside the courtroom of Judge Sam Stevens on June 19th. What did you witness there?
I witnessed the bailiff staring at one of the homeless men, and the man asked the bailiff what he was staring at, and the bailiff asked him to leave the courtroom. He then told the bailiff, F you.
Mm-hmm.
The judge then asked him to leave the courtroom, in which he did. When he walked outside, he yelled at the bailiff, but he never approached him. And the bailiff pepper sprayed him in the face and took him down and arrested him. And then there was another girl that they did the same to, because she was yelling.
Mm-hmm.
I know that they never advanced towards the officers in any way.
Was, the man who was pepper gassed, who was later identified, you know, was Patrick Ring.
Okay.
And was Patrick Did he refuse to leave the area outside of the courthouse?
No, he did not.
Oh.
In fact, he started to walk away, and the officer went after him, talking to him.
Uh-huh. Well, that's funny, because that was the police reported the next day that he had refused to leave the area.
He never refused. In fact, he was walking away when the officer started talking to him.
And that was the same bailiff who was in the courtroom?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was Bailiff Thurber, for all of our listeners, and who was the one who had the encounter with Patrick Ring in the courtroom. And that case will be coming up shortly. You'll have to listen to Free Radio for details on when that hearing will be held. But Deborah was an eyewitness to the account, and you were there for an entirely different reason. Is that correct?
Yeah, I was there for my kids.
Right, because your case with your children.
Yeah.
Yeah. And in the case of the woman who is Sandrea Roth, did she, you know, strike the officer or threaten the officer? You know,
or struck him, and she was pushed down in the bushes.
So
by the officers, and Pepper's been arrested.
Mm-hmm. And so. Okay, well, that was what I saw. I was also there at that courthouse, and that was when I met you. And that's basically what I saw as well. But it'll be interesting to hear what the district attorney's office comes up for their version of events. Mm-hmm. Too bad that Judge Stevens didn't come out and watch himself. He disappeared into chambers with great haste.
Yeah.
While that was going on.
The recess court.
Yeah, right. Okay, Deborah, well, thank you so much for sharing this with our Free Radio listeners.
And you're listening to Bathrobes, Pierre's Broadsides from Jail. And this is Becky Johnson, your guest hostess on this Free Radio show. And you're listening to 96.3 FM, the place where the First Amendment rights still work. Okay, I'd like to bring you up to speed on some of the events that are coming up for us. On July 17th in San Francisco, there will be a Food Not Bombs rally and march to free Robert Norris Kahn, or Robert Kahn, as they call him up there, and Robert Norris, as we call him down here. For more information, call Food Not Bombs San Francisco at area code 415-985-7087. And you can listen to the recorded message. We'll tell you where and when. Or you could call 423-HUFF for details. On July 19th, we will be the benefit for the City Hall Sleepers Protest. This will be at the Pacific Cultural Center, which is on Seabright and Broadway, between 7 and 11 p.m. It's July 19th, people. Write it down on your calendar. We'll have folk music by Mark Levy, Carla Faye, and Larry Hildes. Boy, I didn't know Larry was a musician. He's a... been working as an attorney, helping with the City Hall Sleepers protest and fighting those wacky injunctions that the Santa Cruz City Council feels is appropriate use of time and energy. But so Larry, that embattled attorney from Berkeley, will be one of the performers on that July 19th benefit concert. So come on down. It's a $8 to $10 sliding scale. And we really could use your help to support the vigil, which is now 163 days of a 24-hour day, 7-day vigil at City Hall to protest the sleeping ban. So it's a really righteous, good cause and a civil rights issue right here in our town. And so come on down, show your support, and have a good time. Also on August 2nd, We'll be hearing on the demurrer in Department 1 with Judge Tom Kelly. At issue will be the constitutionality of the camping ban law. And what's happened here is that a number of the people have combined their cases together who've been getting sleeping tickets and Section B covering up with blankets tickets, both protesters and perhaps some people that are not part of the protest at City Hall. I'm not entirely sure on that. But they've had a number of cases combined, and three attorneys, Larry Hildes, previously mentioned from Berkeley, local attorney Kate Wells, and the public defender Ed Chun, will all be meeting in Tom Kelly's court for this, what's called a demurrer, which will first question the constitutionality of the law itself. If the law is found unconstitutional, all of the tickets will be thrown out. So this will be an interesting case. I highly recommend our free radio listening audience to plan on coming down for that hearing. I believe it's at 9 in the morning. Most of those hearings do happen early in the morning. So that's August 2nd. You're listening to 96.3 FM. Becky Johnson. Okay, here's Free Radio Santa Cruz, and we're at City Hall with Dan Hopkins. Hi, Dan.
Hi, how you doing?
So, Dan, did they close down Holy Cross?
Oh, yeah. On Tuesday night, I went up there because they said they had given us a bulletin that Tuesday night was going to be the last night. And so they'd given us a bulletin and everything. But anyway, I went up there Tuesday night, and there was only three cars in the parking lot, which is the only allowable amount of cars in the parking lot. There was no one sleeping on the field, no one under the awning by the church there. And so it was kind of a bad feeling to see and know that about 50 or 60 people are running all over Santa Cruz last night trying to find a place to sleep. I even myself and then one girl, I was trying to help out, actually two girls, to find a place. We went up in the mountains and stuff, but even there it wasn't safe. There was people all over the place who we don't know. They were drinking and things, some of them. And you know, in a mountainous area like that, you don't know what's going to happen when you got women around and stuff.
And so Monday night was the last night for the Holy Cross program.
Actually, it was Tuesday night. Tuesday night, and that was it. I heard that the father wants to try to set up a program there, that the planning department was going to inspect the property and maybe see if they could do that. But the father did say he didn't know how long it would be, and he was sorry that he knew that we weren't going to have any place to go. And it's kind of a bad situation because we don't know, you know, where to go now. Like I said, we tried to out there in the mountains, and it's not even safe out there. So no one has a safe place to go anywhere.
So I noticed there was such a big write-up in the Sentinel about the closing of Holy Cross.
Oh, yeah, they didn't even write anything. And the bad part about...
Hey, Karen Clark, where were you, asleep at the wheel or something?
Right, right. Yeah. And the bad part about up there in Poganip and stuff is I checked that out, too. In the Poganip, in the areas where people camp once in a while, they say there's a lot of troll busters that go out there just looking for people out there, so it's not a feasible place to go unless you're really, really well hidden.
Well, that's too bad. It sounds like the Holy Cross program was a very safe and humane solution, served a lot of people, low cost, and was just shut down by whom?
City Council, of course, and the Planning Department, but mainly the City Council, you can be sure of that. And
the law is the law.
Yeah, the thing that people don't realize is the open-air shelter is the answer, as something that just now popped up to prove that, and that's one of the reasons I did not go to the Armory last year, no matter what the weather was, and 80-mile-an-hour winds, I didn't go to the Armory, because I already knew in advance that tuberculosis is highly contagious in an Armory situation, because they're not ventilated very well in there, and they close the doors in winter, they turn the heat up, and people are sleeping and breathing the same air, and the tuberculosis and many other diseases are flying airborne, especially tuberculosis.
Now, I heard it's 16 times as likely to catch TB in an Armory-type situation.
Right, and then the other thing that just happened is there's an outbreak at the River Street shelter now, tuberculosis outbreak, and this is why an open-air shelter is so much better, because you have your own privacy, you're out in the open air and things, and the chances would be way less, you know, because the conditions aren't good enough to keep the tuberculosis alive, you know, in the air. So that's basically what it is, you know, and the Catholic Church would have been the really, really beautiful place. It's peaceful there. There's plenty of room for everybody, and there was really no.
There was that one complaining neighbor.
Right, right. They had one neighbor that.
One complaint.
Yeah, one complaint. So Rockland would say, "Oh, we're getting more complaints now, so we have to close that down too."
No, no, more complaints would be two.
Yeah, right, right, exactly. So he does this with everything. Like he got a couple complaints from the retirement home up there above the Mercado restaurants and stuff, and he tried to claim there was all kinds of complaints and everything, and basically it was the same woman and a couple others maybe who were complaining about the drumming and about the hippies on the corner and this and that, and so that's all he needs is just an excuse, you know. It's all excuses. He's a very cold-hearted person as far as I'm concerned, you know, and he's not willing to do anything for the homeless whatsoever, and Kennedy's made it just as bad as far as I'm concerned.
Okay, thank you, Dan Hopkins. Okay, I'm speaking with the infamous Pat Ring.
Yeah.
Yeah, I heard you are thrice arrested post injunction.
Three post injunction arrests.
Yeah, one for protruding sign.
One for protruding sign.
One for getting attacked by Thurber.
Yeah, one for being assaulted by Deputy Thurber.
And let's hear about this most
the most recent one.
Oh, okay. Yes. I've heard a version from an eyewitness, but I haven't heard from the old horse's mouth yet.
We had this elderly asshole that came over here and had problems with this flag that was flying here. And I had nothing to do with it. I had only been here for approximately 30 seconds when this man walked up. And I wasn't going to get into it.
Can't take you anywhere, can we, Patrick?
No. And I wasn't going to get into it, but he asked us, you know, is this how you feel about America? And a couple people said, yeah, this is, obviously. And then he immediately started attacking Michelle and called her a fat bitch.
Wow.
And that is when I decided to get involved. And I said, well, you know, fuck you. Who the fuck do you think you are coming over here and insulting people? I said, you know, it's one thing. We're making a political statement. And that's one thing. But, you know, you're going to come over here and personally attack people. I said, well, get the fuck out of here. Mm-hmm. And so he immediately started running over there towards the fountain, mm-hmm. saying he was going to call the police. I said, well, get your fucking ass over there and call them, you know. Mm-hmm. I don't care.
Mm-hmm.
And at that time, Rotkin came out. Mike Rotkin, the mayor, came out and was standing on the steps right here. And he said, well, Pat. Yeah, he had a few words with me because I've called him an asshole and a liar and a few other things in to his face.
And on Channel 72.
Right, you know. And so he said, hey, I'm going to have you arrested for civil disobedience. At which time I said, you're going to do what? And I walked over to him to have a few words with him. I said, you're going to have me arrested for civil disobedience, you piece of shit? You know, who the fuck do you think you are? I mean, you've been arrested for civil disobedience. I said, what I'm doing right now is not civil disobedience. I said, and there is no law against civil disobedience. And he said, well, you keep it up, I'm going to have you arrested. I said, fuck you! And he went in and he called the police.
With the appropriate finger gesture.
Right, and the police came, and at which time Mike Rotkin said, I'm placing you under citizen's arrest, at which time I said, fuck you! And they arrested me, took me to jail, held me for 5 days.
5 days.
5 days, at which time I was released on an OR with the promise to not return to the vigil and stay 100 yards from City Hall, which I'm strictly abiding by. And within 100 yards of City Hall or Mike Rotkin. And they had me scared, so I won't be back to City Hall. And that's basically it. I went to court today, and we said we have a court date for August 22nd.
So you've pled not guilty?
Not guilty, yeah. Mm-hmm. And also all this stuff that happened the mm-hmm. other day.
And you pled not guilty for the assault
right.
of Thurber, so-called.
Assault, yeah, assault. Uh-huh. Apparently when you are beat up by the police, you are assault. That's an assault. If mm-hmm. you allow them to hit you, yes. then you, because their fists attacked your face, you're guilty of assault. So, I was charged with assault.
Yeah, we have a lot of eyewitnesses to that.
Yeah, a lot,
you know.
A lot. And we have a lot of character witnesses for Deputy Thurber, too.
Lawyers. And
so, I have a really good feeling about that case.
So that's August 22nd?
August 22nd.
Oh, that ought to be interesting.
Yeah,
to be one of the more colorful court cases here.
Yeah, it should be a good one. It should be a good one.
Yeah.
And they're both tied in together now. So the case that happened at City Hall, of which I'm nowhere near City Hall right now, that case will be tied in with the other ones. It'll all happen together.
Cool. So you're going to be at the benefit on, what is it, July 19th?
July 19th. Friday, July 19th at the Pacific Cultural Center, Broadway and Seabright. Yeah, 7 o'clock p.m. with Larry the Lyrical Lawyer.
I didn't know he was musically inclined.
Neither did we.
he may not
still
be.
Know. We'll find out. Yeah. But we got Just Kidding, Carla Faye, and Mark Levy appearing. So.
All right. Yeah. Well, come down and support the City Hall Sleepers protest.
Yeah. Yeah.
This is a benefit, so bring some money.
$8 gets you in.
And well worth it, every penny.
Right, cheap at any price.
Yeah. Thank you, Patrick Ring.
Hey, thank you.
And next I'm going to play for you a tape that was made at the Santa Cruz County Courthouse regarding the Timothy Rio Tutar case. As you probably have been reading in the papers, Timothy Rio Tutar has been in jail for the past year. He was arrested for having a loaded gun on his person while sleeping in a hammock. And he's been in jail, which is normally not a crime, but for someone who's on parole, it is a crime. And since he had had two previous charges, this was considered his third felony strike. And if convicted of this charge, Timothy would have faced 25 years to life under the three strikes law. What actually happened was the Supreme Court recently ruled that allowed judges to have discretion in throwing out a previous strike as counting towards the three strikes and the mandatory minimum of 25 years to life for a third felony strike charge. And in so this is a tape that was made following the first hearing in which Judge Robert Yontz was deciding whether he was going to throw out one of the previous charges and thereby nullifying Timothy Rio Tutar for a third strike charge.
About what's going on with Timothy Rio Tutar.
I think they should drop that third strike against him and let him be free so he can live a normal, happy life. So
what do you think about this this latest charge that he fell asleep with a loaded gun?
I believe they're just trying to pin that on him.
Yeah, we know the truth. He was actually trying to rescue his girlfriend's son. You know, the gun and stuff belonged to him, and he was trying to rescue his girlfriend's son, and he got caught with this. He fell asleep and had those things on him, and it was a probation violation, right?
Yeah, exactly.
So why did he have the gun?
He took it away from his girlfriend's son.
Yeah, he took it away from someone else.
Just went up there to rescue somebody.
Yeah, because his girlfriend's son was in having little problems and stuff, so he went over there to take care of him just like a stepfather should.
And ended up falling asleep, you know, not wanting to drive.
So he'd taken the gun away from this other party man who shouldn't have had it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And then he went out there and his vehicle was gone, so he had to wait for his vehicle in order to leave from there, and then that's how they had got him between.
Well, they haven't had the trial on this third strike that yet, right? About that's upcoming still, right?
I also think this kind of case, there's so many people in jail for drugs and alcohol that it's ridiculous. You know, three strikes for offenses that have to do with drug and alcohol, there's got to be a better way. Rehabilitation for someone who's had a drug and alcohol problem for a long time needs to be for a long time, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I know, you know?
And he's been with the Santa Cruz community for all his life, you know? And so, but he's, you know, his education ain't all that good, but other than that, he's all right.
He's a good guy.
So, like, a medical
guy.
Problem should be treated medically?
No, he just is like, he's sort of like me, you know, you tell him something, and then he just goes along with the program, but he don't really know what he's saying. He's just going along with it just to make everybody happy.
So, if it were a program that was really geared to, you know, where his heart is at, you know, you think he'd do better?
He'd be ready for a program.
Yeah,
he's made him ready.
Yeah, he's ready. Yeah. He's ready to go to a program instead of going to prison for the rest of his life.
Well, what I'm really struck by is the way that not only Timothy's family, but this greater American Indian community, this tribal community, has come together in support of Timothy.
That's because his nationality is Indian, as you can tell. And they all know that he's, you know, a good person. He's not out there killing nobody, or he's not out there ripping people off or nothing. You know, he's just trying to survive.
In fact, none of his prior charges were for a violent crime.
That's true.
No, they're all drug related.
They're all drug related. And he's just trying to survive in this world. You know, it's pretty rough out here for all of us.
And he's already paid, done his time for the previous charges. I mean, why does that keep coming up? I mean, yes, because of the three strikes law, but I mean, they were going way back into his history. And supposedly once you've done the time, that's what you're supposed to be over with, you know?
And you're listening to an interview conducted on July 9th at Santa Cruz County Courthouse with some of the supporters of Timothy Rio Tutar, the man who is up on a possible third strike charge.
In fact, none of his prior charges were for a violent crime.
That's true.
No, they're all drug related.
They're all drug related. And he's just trying to survive in this world, you know? It's pretty rough out here for all of us.
And he's already paid, done his time for the previous charges. I mean, why does that keep coming up? I mean, yes, because of the three strikes law, but I mean, they were going way back into his history. And supposedly once you've done the time, that's what you're supposed to be over with. You're not supposed to be hold it against you.
Yeah.
You know? So they went way back into his childhood. So, your turn.
So everybody support Timmy's Foundation out there, and you know, it's all good.
So what do you think is going to happen tomorrow at 10:30?
I think that he'll be found innocent, or
the charges dropped.
Yeah, because something dropped. Because I believe that he's innocent.
Have
because
time served for the year that he's already dead.
And a program.
Because and then maybe give him a program, and then go from there. See how it is.
Well, that would be the sensible thing. But what do you think's really going to happen?
I think he's going to get a program.
I think they're going to go to jury trial. I think they'll go to jury trial. This is a big deal. You know,
it has drawn a lot of attention because of the three strikes law and because of the nonviolent nature of this latest charge.
I believe he's the second one here in Santa Cruz to get the third strike. Is that true?
Yeah, there was that black guy. You know, also, too, though, maybe they won't spend the money on a jury trial. They'll probably plea bargain. It'll probably just be a while.
They'll spend the money. It's our money. They'll spend it.
Oh, yeah, they ain't got no conscience on that one.
That's no threat.
That's more money for them.
Yeah, but his lawyer is not a public defender. You know, so I don't know.
So what'd you think of Bill Minkner, his defense attorney?
I think he's a very good lawyer.
He's a humanitarian.
He's very good. Right. Yeah, he cares about all the people.
Yeah, this is his mom.
Yeah, he cares about all the people.
Timmy Rutar's mom's coming up now. So.
I spoke to Mary.
What radio station are you on?
96.5.
Yeah, 96.3 FM. Oh, yeah. Free radio in Santa Cruz.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I bought a tape today from him. It said kill all cops.
Well, we have some of the more radical elements on a show. I'm actually
speech, right?
Taping for a show called Bathrobes, Piers, Broadsides.
When's
from
that?
The jail. It's the jailhouse version.
When is that on?
It's on Mondays and Fridays from 10 till 12.
In the evening?
In the morning.
Oh.
Yeah, 10 in the morning to 12.
Okay.
All family stuff.
Yeah.
This is his mom.
This is a baby.
Can I talk to you for a little bit, Mary?
Sure.
Yeah. So you well, if you don't want to answer, that's fine. So you spoke to the attorney, Bill Minkner. Did he attempt to prepare you for what might happen tomorrow?
I've got to wait a long time. Yeah.
I prepared myself. I don't need anyone to really prepare me because I know either side.
Because they get to give him back.
Do you think he's getting a fair trial here?
I think he is. As fair as it could be. We have a good lawyer. Only the district attorney wants him badly, but then it's up to Bill to defend and the judge. I always thought the judge would be really compassionate. I think a lot of it has to do with politics, though. They have to be careful of who they sentence, because he already let one man that murdered someone on the freeway out. So now he's getting a lot of flack from that, the judges. So now I think he's more or less hesitating whether he should go ahead and make this judgment today, so he put it off till tomorrow.
Of course, it was the district attorney's office that decided to press charges against your son.
Of course. Uh-huh. District attorney wants my son very bad. Because the district attorney wants to make a name for himself. I think he wants to be the next district attorney, from what I hear from different lawyers.
You mean Paul Maragonda?
Paul Maragonda is a little devil. He's out to get my son regardless. Doesn't care how he does it, what he does to get him. He brings up different little charges which fall apart, and then he brings up something else.
I didn't see any Paul Maragonda supporters in the peanut gallery.
I didn't either. I thought he'd bring some assistants, but he was there by himself. Usually he has a couple people with him, but today I think he just has enough. Well, he thinks he's going to win the case. But prayer has a lot to do with it. I believe in prayer. Our Indian group believe in prayer. We always have. If we don't win one, we'll win it the next. We're going to go on after this. This is not the end. Whatever they decide tomorrow is not the end of it. We'll go higher.
Well, maybe your son's case will bring some awareness to, you know, what's going on with both with the three strikes law and in the lack of programs and workable programs for people with alcohol and drug problems.
Right. I think they should. My son's problem is not alcohol. People bring up alcohol. I mean, that's his is drugs. He's a strong heroin user at times.
No, it's a known fact that the more a person...
I mean, you know, they don't get the counseling, they don't get whatever they should have,
and they're in prison, it just get worse.
When they come out, they're lost souls. They're lost.
Because they don't know how to take care of themselves. So they get back with old friends, and people really condemn you because you're an ex-con, you know. People don't want to hire you for work. So there you have that. That's a three strike against you, you know.
The stigma.
The stigma,
whatever you call it.
I'm not an English person. My English is not perfect, but I try to tell it, no.
Well, another thing's very impressive about your son's case is the way that the American Indians have, community has come together and supporting.
They're from all over the country, from Europe also, you know, they've had people that signed in, even from back east. We had Ramona Africa. I don't know if you know her.
From the Move
8, I think it is. And we had her lawyer sign the papers. We've had Angela Davis, and everyone was supporting him. They said they couldn't come, but they support him. Mm-hmm. And we've had prayers from all over the country with the different Indian ceremonies going on, praying for him. So we'll win. We'll win.
Thank you. Mary Tutar.
Rio Tutar.
Rio Tutar.
I need...
Now, basically, what happened at the Tuesday, July 9th hearing with Timothy Rio Tutar was that defense attorney Bill Minkner argued that the previous strikes had been hurriedly processed through the courts, that Timothy had only spent minutes with the public defender. He had not been adequately informed that he had a right to a jury trial, or whether that was be something that he may have chosen, among other rights. The declaration of William Kelsey was submitted as evidence to the contrary. And the notes that upon which this declaration was based, upon search of the files, it was determined that those notes had been destroyed. Paul Maragonda argued that any notes, you know, if a flood happened, the criminals all across the land would seize that as an opportunity to have some of their past sentences commuted. And called that a gross miscarriage of justice. Judging from the people in the courtroom, I seemed there was not a sole person who was supportive in that position in attendance in the court.
So when Judge Robert Yontz convened on July 10th, 10:30 in the morning, he had considered Timothy Tutar's case and did decide to remove one of his previous charges as to be considered as a strike. After that, Timothy pleaded guilty to the charge of having the weapon and now faces 9 years in jail for that. So Timothy Rio Tutar was not tried on as a third strike case. However, 9 years is pretty long for the charge of having fallen asleep with a gun in his hand, not because having that loaded pistol, as we heard from some of the family members who had gathered in support of Timothy Rio Tutar in the court, that the reason that he had the gun was that he had taken it away from the son of his girlfriend's son. And the district attorney, Paul Maraganda, had one of the arguments that he made in court was the size and caliber of the gun, and that it was as powerful a gun as a police officer carries. Yet, when we hear the facts of the case, Timothy didn't pick out the gun. That just happened to be the model and type of gun that he had retrieved from a person who, according to the friends of Timothy Rio Tutar, that this person should not have had the gun, and that he was really protecting his family by taking this gun away from this other party. You're listening to Bathrobes, Pierres, Broadsides from Jail. I am Becky Johnson. I'm your guest hostess in this time slot on Free Radio 96.3 FM. And Bathrobes Pierre himself will be returning to the airwaves here upon his release. His release date, as we speak, is July 27th, but we're always hopeful that the powers that be may release him sooner, because going to jail is no fun. In fact, coming up next is an interview that was conducted with Robert Norse himself, direct from County Jail. And this is an interview that was done yesterday, July 11th. So listen in.
Okay. All right, we're on the line with Robert Norse Kahn. Is that what they're calling you now?
Pretty soon I'll be an ex-con.
Robert Norse, soon to be an ex-con. Bathrobes Pierre himself, calling from County Jail 8. Robert, I understand that you're involved with some other people in circulating a petition.
That's true. I'm circulating a petition which, as I guess listeners of Free Radio Santa Cruz know from your past broadcasts, is designed to get the authorities off the dime on the law library issue here in beautiful County Jail 8 in San Francisco, which is a new jail. Facilities are nicer, but the kiddies don't have access to fundamental legal rights. To wit, they can't get to a law library to research their cases unless they transfer out of this facility into much nastier facilities, either the main jail or the San Bruno Annex, or use law students who will occasionally, like days later, bring back Xeroxes of some of what they want. I mean, it's not a good situation, not in my mind a legal or constitutional situation. Certainly not a fair situation, so I've been circulating a petition, which I will read to our avid listeners if you would like.
I'd like to hear that.
All right, this is a petition, and in fact, we're hoping that tomorrow morning it will be also circulated in front of the jail at the Free Robert Vigil, which has been going on throughout my incarceration during the week, where Food Not Bomb serves oatmeal and propaganda to an eager public.
Oatmeal and propaganda, huh?
Correct. Oatmeal.
A good combination there.
Oh.
You know, propaganda that sticks to your ribs.
Yeah, Well, hopefully. We, the inmates of County Jail 8, need and demand access to a usable law library. The current system of using inexperienced law student volunteers to research legal questions instead of allowing prisoners direct access to law books is fundamentally inadequate. Prisoners trying to use the law student system report long delays and insufficient information. While well-intentioned, the researcher system fails to meet the basic needs of those of us who are trying to research our cases and use the legal system and have access to the courts. Huge amounts of money are budgeted to build more jails, spending a tiny portion of a jail budget to open a vitally needed law library or to secure access to the existing main jail library for those of us in CJ-8 a block away is a reasonable request. There is a usable law library in the main jail at 850 Bryant Street connected to CJ-8 by internal passageways. The sheriff could assign deputies to escort prisoners to this law library until a new law library is actually put into CJ-8, which should have been done when the jail was opened. We ask that we be granted access to the main jail library. If staff time is a problem, some of us are willing to give up recreation time if necessary to be able to use the law library. Prison authorities have offered to transfer prisoners who want law library access to the older and more primitive facilities of the main jail or the San Bruno Annex. This is not an acceptable solution. CJ-8, a new jail, provides important violence-reducing programs and facilities. We do not want to be transferred to worse living conditions to secure what should be an established right to use the law library. We support the grievance complaints and legal actions independently being filed by some inmates to bring the law library situation to the attention of the jail and judicial authorities. We ask that no punitive measures be taken against any prisoner seeking genuine useful access to the law library. We would interpret transferring a prisoner involuntarily to the main jail or San Bruno, quote, to grant access to the law library as a form of punitive reprisal. Humbly yours, the prisoners of CJ-8. Just kidding about the humbly, of course. And that's the petition I'm circulating on. There's also a Spanish language version, which was written by one of the inmates here. And we've gotten about 40 to 50 signatures so far.
Out of 90.
Out of actually 90 or 100. The jail is filling up with more people. And some of the people, only a handful have declined to sign, particularly when they see that everybody else is signing. It's just like it's become fashionable to be radical here in the jail. Actually, access to a law library is not a radical demand. It's rather a conservative demand, actually.
I thought that one was one that had been fundamentally tested throughout the court systems, that prisoners are allowed access and need to be allowed access to a law library.
Well, I think the key phrase, as I understand it, not too clear on it because I haven't read the legal decisions on it, is access to the courts, and having access to a law library can be an important part of that process of access to the courts. They are claiming here, and apparently they've been sued in the past, according to Mike Markham, who's the third in charge of the jail, who talked to me briefly when he came through with a tour about 2 weeks ago, told me that the law library was an issue at different times, and their most recent solution has been to simply send in volunteer law student interns, which I can tell you is not good, particularly if you don't get along with the law intern. You know, the law interns don't expect activists, they expect docile prisoners, and I'm having a hard time having any kind of meaningful relationship with my law intern helper, although he's doing his best he can. The head of the program, Nate Harrington, he seems to be blowing, well, I don't know if he'd say he's blowing hot and cold, but he initially was going to help me, and then I heard nothing from him for 5 days. He was supposed to be here on Monday to help out. Instead, the law intern student showed up. And he then called me last night on the hotline, Food Not Bombs hotline, which anybody, by the way, can reach me on if you want to leave a message for poor old Robert in the big house. Just give a call to 415-985-7087 and leave a message. And, hey, I'll know who it's from, and if you want to leave your phone number and you're willing to take a collect call, I'd be happy to spend your money and call you up. You can actually get a phone call from a genuine political prisoner in San Francisco.
Wow.
Charge other than the phone call itself.
How neat. I'm sure our free radio audience is jumping up and down.
Yeah, they're all rushing to their phones.
Well, they could, because this is a taped interview, and you might be just twiddling your thumbs in CJ-8, you know.
Yeah, it's again 415-985-7087, and just leave a message Anyway, I'm having difficulty getting any kind of real assistance from the prison system here. They're obviously overworked, just as the public defenders are. And I am probably one of the luckiest prisoner here. I mean, I'm obviously the luckiest prisoner here. I got the most attention from the media. Washington Post came in today. He did an interview with me. And reporters written for the Bay Guardian, the San Francisco Bay Guardian.
And I heard that photographs were taken.
Sorry?
I heard photographs were taken.
They took some very revealing photographs of me, which may command some high prices on the black market. Yes. I'm hoping that Hustler, or I should say Playgirl, will be in next.
Hey, how did those Post people rate? I wasn't allowed to take photographs.
Well, you know, the Washington Post, or the Washington Pest, as it's known in some quarters, is a big newspaper, unlike your rather modest credentials. In my mind, you've got better credentials than the Washington Post writer, and I say that not simply because of a personal affection for you, but because, well, frankly, you've been covering the situation more closely, and the questions you ask are more probing. They were more concerned with glitter, glatter, glitter, and clatter.
And the name of your teddy bear.
They did want to know the name of my teddy bear.
They did, huh?
They demanded to know Edwina's name and all her stats. I told them that was a privileged information, that she was currently residing in the lockup, and when she got out, we could confer about it, talk to her, or possibly have her attorney present.
So how long was this interview with the Washington Post?
Oh, lasted about an hour and a half. I was able to actually sneak the Washington Post writer into the jail itself, which is unusual because they don't let reporters in here. The photographer couldn't get in. We sent him away so we could have a chance of getting her in, and we just walked her in kind of using a see no evil, hear no evil, say no evil stance, kind of muttering when the deputy asked us questions, and I said, this woman's here to interview me, and he said, okay.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't even say that. He thought, I think the deputy thought she was a lawyer, and I didn't disabuse him of the notion, so he got to look at the facilities, which may actually have... The facilities here look less frightening than you would imagine on the outside when you hear the word jail.
Mm-hmm.
They look kind of like a dormitory with just a little bit of exercising equipment. It's kind of like a, I think you described it as a weight-reducing salon or something like that.
Yeah, it reminded me like 41st Avenue Fitness Center.
Right.
You know, all these people in their sweatsuits working out.
Well, people here work out a lot. I myself, of course, have been using my fingers a lot as I write endless petitions and, notes on this and that, letters.
And this is kind of unusual for you to be writing things longhand, is that not?
That's correct. Usually I'm connected to a computer or, at worst, to a typewriter. That doesn't happen much, but when, you know, like when the vigil first started, City Hall Sleepers Vigil, I was typing. At the vigil for the first 2 days steadily. But, yeah, you've got to do what you got to do, and sometimes you got to write longhand, and hey, better longhand than no hand, I guess.
So is this bringing out different aspects of your personality, writing things out? And
I find it hard to read my own handwriting, which is one of the main problems, but once I get past that, I'm okay.
Now, Robert, you know that Holy Cross closed down on Tuesday.
I heard you told me that at one point, yeah.
Yeah, and that this did not even rate nary a mention in the Sentinel or the Metro.
Yeah, that's why you need to do some kind of disruptive demonstration to get these suckers to respond. I mean, you have to shake things up or they're just going to cover things up. I mean, that's just how it is. It's always been that way in Santa Cruz. And people who criticize me and others for unseemly demonstrations just have no understanding of the fact that without the power of homeless people to obstruct business as usual, you get business as usual. That's what has to change. And really until significant segment of the homeless population. It doesn't have to be a majority or even a strong minority, but it has to be a segment that has the courage to step forward, as some people have with the City Hall sleepout. You're going to have social service providers.
voted for the injunction.
Of course, and he tore down the signs. And seems to have no criticism for Mayor Rutkin's personal campaign as Fuhrer of Santa Cruz to put the protesters in jail. He doesn't like the sound of. And also to coddle trollbusters who are coming by in cars. I should say at least one trollbuster. I mean, Rutkin is quite a piece of work these days. I don't know how the city of Santa Cruz can stand that kind of behavior from an individual who is their mayor. I think it's disgraceful. I think that the fact that he would come out in favor of closing down a church sanctuary, it indicates to me even more strongly that his position has worsened since he took the step of aborting the homeless campground, the Coral Street Open Air Shelter, back in December of 1995, unilaterally.
Well, you know, you heard about
he had the sanction of the city council to do it when he did not. When that campground had been open for 2 years, it hadn't required a permit throughout the year, and suddenly he was ranting about permits, just as in San Francisco, they talk about permits for food, not bonds. It's the same kind of bureaucratic double talk. It simply disguises his own arbitrary decisions based upon what he feels is the political climate he wants to coddle to.
Now, you know that Mayor Rutkin was supposed to speak at the Three Strikes rally outside the courthouse on Tuesday the 9th.
Right.
And I circulated a flyer critical of Mike Rutkin and just those issues that you've just discussed.
Right. I suggested a sign, not a flyer, which I think would have been a better idea, but since I'm in jail, I guess
yes, well, we need to hear you grumping so that we know that all's right in the world.
You circulated this flyer, and then what happened?
Well, Mayor Rutkin
suddenly disappeared.
He didn't speak. He ended up not speaking, and he was scheduled to speak.
Well, that's interesting. I think what you should do in order to pierce the heart of this mystery is call him and find out why he didn't speak. Ask him straightforwardly, saying, what happened? We were waiting for a speech for you.
Yeah, we have all, in the absence of real information, of course, then we've...
And of course, the next question to ask him is he going to go for a third strike on Pat Ring? He's already got two strikes. Is he going to go for strike number three? I mean, that's the question. And by that, of course, I mean two completely unjustified arrests which are based upon Pat Ring's First Amendment activities, namely a protest at City Hall where he wasn't assaulting anyone. He wasn't raping, killing, murdering, littering, you know, or even loitering. He was engaging in genuine First Amendment activity, which our mayor found distasteful, and so called the police on it. I mean, this is, if any progressives even are even thinking of voting for this man in November, and I assume he is running again for city council, they are in great political confusion to even be considering that.
Well, certainly if you consider yourself still, you know, a progressive and interested in progressive politics, Mike Rutkin seems to masquerade as a progressive, or maybe he used to be a progressive, but he's sold out along the way now, because I just don't see anything akin to progressive politics coming from Mike Rutkin these days.
It's a strange case. I mean, you know, on the campus, reportedly, he's very helpful to left-wing professors who are fledgling radicals there on the campus, and he's quite open in his views. He's come on Free Radio Santa Cruz a number of times. He's been willing to debate with me, for example, in a way that Scott Kennedy has not, you know, to Rutkin's credit. The problem is, with Rutkin is, he has nothing to say. I mean, you can hear his rap once or twice, but after that, you know exactly what you're going to hear. Now, maybe the same thing could be said for what I have to say. You know, I suppose, in all fairness, those on the other side might say the same thing about me. But I guess, leave it at that for that particular point. But Rutkin has, you know, he's accessible as a human being.
Okay, I've got the Rutkin flyer. I just pulled it up on my computer. It says, from the City Hall sleepers protest to Mayor Mike Rutkin, 3 strikes against Mayor Mike. Strike number 1. Close the Coral Street Open Air Shelter December 17, 1995. Strike number 2. Obtained an injunction against the City Hall Sleepers protest May 31, 1996. Strike number 3 is closing Holy Cross, evicting up to 60 homeless July 10th, 96. 3 strikes and you're out. We wish.
Time to let somebody else take over. I think so. It's always good in those kinds of flyers, and I'm glad that one got out, to add exactly the consequences of each of these strikes. First consequence.
And you're listening to Bathrobes Pierre's Broadsides from Jail. This is Becky Johnson, your hostess for this morning show on 96.3 FM.